Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average up 110 at 18,339. S&P 500 up 11 at 2,171. NASDAQ Composite up 12 at 5,318. Yield on the 10-year Treasury up 1 basis point at 1.57%. Oil up $2.34 at $47.01 per barrel, and gold down $5.60 at $1,322.40 per ounce. Today started as a regular day. Stocks were trading just a bit lower, no big moves. Fed Chair Yellen was speaking on Capitol Hill, an economic report on durable goods. Kind of a quiet day, really. Then came word from Algiers. Remember the big oil summit? Reuters reported that two sources in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries said the group would reduce output to 32.5 million barrels per day from current production of 33.24 million barrels per day. How much each country will produce is to be decided at the next formal meeting of OPEC in November, when an invitation to join cuts could also be extended to non-OPEC countries such as Russia. The price of oil popped by more than 5%. That was the knee-jerk reaction. But let's dig in. First, we know that OPEC members are notorious for violating production limits. Next, there is no agreement with non-OPEC oil producers, specifically Russia and the U.S. And there is a seasonal tendency to cut back production in the winter months anyway. So OPEC will produce less, as is their seasonal tendency. Oil demand will drop in the winter, and there will still be an oil glut at the end of the year. Still, it was trade first, ask questions later. Heading into the energy forum in Algiers, there was a real concern that prices could dip to sub-$20 a barrel levels if no decision was made, and that would leave many producers pumping at below market rate, so with every barrel they would be making a loss, if they aren't already. The Saudis are running a budget deficit. Venezuela, Nigeria, and Algeria are in desperate need of oil revenues. So OPEC announced a production limit, which is really no limit at all. Congress has overwhelmingly rejected President Obama's veto of legislation allowing relatives of the victims of September 11th attacks to sue Saudi Arabia, the first veto override of his presidency. The House of Representatives voted 348-76 against the veto, just hours after the Senate rejected it 97-1, meaning the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act will become law. Obama had argued that the bill could expose U.S. companies, troops, and officials to lawsuits and alienate important allies at a time of global unrest. Major U.S. corporations, including General Electric and Dow Chemical, also opposed it, as did the European Union and other U.S. allies. Let the lawsuits begin. The Senate has approved a stopgap funding bill to avert a looming federal government shutdown. Republicans and Democrats agreed to help Flint, Michigan resolve its drinking water crisis. The bill also includes $1.1 billion to combat the Zika virus and $500 million for flood relief in Louisiana and other states. Lawmakers voted 72-26 to adopt the Short-Term Continuing Resolution, or CR, that would keep federal agencies operating from Saturday to December 9th. The vote sends the measure on to the House of Representatives, which also is expected to approve it. Without an extension, many government agencies would run out of money when the federal fiscal year ends midnight on Friday. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen delivered semi-annual testimony this morning before the House Financial Services Committee. Since the Fed left interest rates steady at its meeting last week, expectations for the next hike have shifted toward the central bank's December meeting. At the meeting, Yellen hinted that a hike would likely follow before the end of the year, saying that the case for an increase has strengthened, but the committee wanted to wait for more economic evidence before raising rates. Today, Yellen said the financial condition of the top U.S. banks has strengthened considerably since the financial crisis, as she outlined steps the central bank is considering to make bigger banks have larger cushions and have smaller banks face less stringent requirements. Lawmakers pressed Yellen over the Wells Fargo mess, and Yellen said the Fed has started a review of the disturbing compliance failures. Wells Fargo Chairman and Chief Executive John Stumpf will forfeit $41 million in unvested equity awards. The bank's board moved to rescind pay for Stumpf and former community banking head Kerry Tolstead, ahead of a hearing of the House Financial Services Committee Thursday. Wells Fargo's board said Tolstead, who oversaw retail banking during bad behavior there, will forfeit unvested equity awards valued at $19 million. Clawbacks, or their absence, became a big focus of a Senate Banking Committee hearing last week into the bank's sales tactics, which earlier resulted in a $185 million fine and regulatory action. During his appearance before that panel, Stumpf and the bank were roundly criticized for firing 5,300 employees over 5 years, yet taking no action against top executives. Well, no violins for Stumpf and Tolstead. Stumpf already holds nearly 5.5 million shares of Wells Fargo, worth north of $240 million. Tolstead is retiring with a $125 million golden parachute, more or less. And you have to admit, that's a hefty pay package for destroying the reputation of a 164-year-old bank. The Labor Department has just announced it has opened a top-to-bottom review of how Wells treated workers tasked to meet unrealistic sales targets. That includes firing workers who reported misdeeds. It also includes failing to pay overtime to workers who toiled extra hours to reach impossible sales quotas. The agency has set up a special website for current and former Wells Fargo employees to instruct them how to file complaints about labor law violations. Meanwhile, the state of California will no longer use Wells Fargo as an underwriter for the issuance of state municipal bonds, and the bank will have no involvement in the state's banking or investment activities for the next 12 months. California currently has $2.3 billion invested in Wells Fargo, fixed income and equity, and is the largest issuer of municipal bonds, and it's the home state of Wells Fargo. California State Treasurer John Chang issued a statement saying, "Wells Fargo's fleecing of its customers by opening fraudulent accounts for the purpose of extracting millions in illegal fees demonstrates, at best, a reckless lack of institutional control, and at worst, a culture which actively promotes wanton greed." The Arizona Republic has never endorsed a Democrat for president. Until now. Newspaper's editorial board writes, "The challenges the United States faces domestically and internationally demand a steady hand, a cool head, and the ability to think carefully before acting. Hillary Clinton understands this. Donald Trump does not." The newspaper said Trump is not conservative and he is not qualified. Orders for durable or long-lasting goods were unchanged in August after a sizable gain the prior month. Still, it was better than estimates, which called for a decline. Demand declined for aircraft, heavy machinery, computers, and electrical equipment. Orders for core capital goods rose 0.6% and posted the third increase in a row. The last time that happened was at the end of 2014 and early 2015. Core orders are viewed as a proxy for business investment. Anheuser-Busch InBev has clinched its $103 billion takeover of SABMiller after the brewer's investors approved the deal that unites the world's two biggest beer makers about a year after it was first proposed. AB InBev will dominate the combined entity, which will account for one of every three beers sold worldwide. Germany denies reports of a possible Deutsche Bank bailout. Germany's finance minister says it's not working on a rescue plan for Deutsche Bank, contrary to an earlier report from the German newspaper Die Zeit. Deutsche Bank told employees not to worry. In a memo sent to employees, the German investment bank said it had no intention to settle with the U.S. Department of Justice at a price anywhere near the opening position of $14 billion, and that it has no plans to raise additional capital. RBS has agreed to a toxic mortgage settlement. The bank agreed to pay $1.1 billion to settle claims it missold toxic mortgage security products to the U.S. Central Federal Credit Union and Western Corporate Federal Credit Union in the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. Tyson Foods recalling 60 tons of fully cooked chicken nuggets that may be contaminated with hard plastic. The problem may have come from a rod used in the manufacturing process. No confirmed reports of adverse reactions to the products. Tyson said the nuggets were supplied to Costco stores and also a Pennsylvania wholesaler. It's the end of an era. BlackBerry, the Canadian company that invented the smartphone and addicted legions of road warriors to the CrackBerry, has stopped making its iconic handsets, finally conceding defeat in a battle it had long ago lost to Apple and Samsung, BlackBerry handing over production of the phones to overseas partners while it turns its full attention to the more profitable and growing software business. BlackBerry said it struck a licensing deal with an Indonesian company to make and distribute BlackBerry-branded devices. More deals are in the works with Chinese and Indian manufacturers. Dow Jones Industrial Average today up 110 at 18,339. S&P 500 up 11 at 2171. NASDAQ Composite up 12 at 5318. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is sinclairknow.com. Text, audio, author interviews, and much more at sinclairknow.com.